Hello and welcome to Happy Place, the show where I, Fern Cotton, explore the world of mindfulness and well-being with some interesting folk. Today is no exception as we meet singer, songwriter and all-around fascinating lady Ellie Goulding.
Going from being completely unknown to suddenly everyone knowing who you are, everyone discussing your face, your clothes, your weight, you know, your lyrics, your odd opinion, everything was discussed. It was just like, how do you deal with that?
Ellie is so wonderfully open and candid about so many things in this chat, and I really didn't know she was going to be so willing to talk so intimately on this occasion. And I really hope that you get as much out of it as I did.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
And now, here's the show.
Hi, darling. Hi, guys. Oh, you're like 2 minutes late, don't worry.
It's been forever.
What joy it is to see you again. It's been ages.
You too, I know. Too long.
So long.
Yeah.
Are you good? Are you well?
I'm really good. Yeah. I feel sort of quite zen in general at the moment.
That's
nice. And I kind of walk, you know, this is kind of my, every time I walk out the house now, it's just wet hair, no makeup, and it feels really good.
Isn't it the best? Because obviously you've spent so much time having to be Ellie Goulding and you've got to wear the makeup or whatever the theme is, and just to like be you.
Yeah.
Heaven.
It is heaven. It's like a new world. It's like a new, yeah, way of being. It's really mad. I didn't know any different, you know, from my, I suppose I'd call it like my old life, but I know I'm going to have to get back into that at some point again with next album and all that stuff. But the idea of having a day off or just doing my own thing was so alien to me. I remember coming home for like one day at a time, coming off tour, and knowing that I had one day to just do whatever I wanted, but just one day, and then the next day I was off again. So at the moment, it's just so nice to rock up to the studio and just have a bit more freedom. I say that, I'm off again on Wednesday, and then I'm off again somewhere else. But at the moment, it just feels like it's... I think I keep saying chill, but I just feel a lot more relaxed generally, I think.
Is it a lot more on your terms as well, do you think, now?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've gone through so many changes with management and label, and I have a whole new team of people. So I think before, because we were all mates, it just, you know, I almost wanted to be working because it was always with the people I loved, and it was always... And now it just feels a bit more... like I am like doing a job, which is good because I can separate work and friends. And so I feel like I do, you know, it's more productive. We just used to, you know, like fuck around basically before. So now it feels like I have someone cracking the whip a bit more, but actually I can be more of a boss in the sense that I can say that, you know, I really just cannot do that today. I really have to have a day off today. And I've never felt like I could do that before because I didn't know any better. I was like, well, if I don't have a day off, you know, everything's going to go tits up and I'm going to have to, you know, my career's going to end. And so now because it's trial and error and I know what works and what doesn't and what I need to do and what I don't need to do, it's like, yeah, I've got the experience now. Mm. Thank God.
Isn't it weird, that sort of fear of having any time out? Like, I totally can understand that one. I have that all the time. Even if I'm so knackered and think, I need to take a break from this craziness, then there's such a fear of, oh my God, but A,
how will I emotionally get back into it? Will I get back into it? Like, it's a real fear.
Do you mean like the fear of like just doing nothing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fear of doing nothing, and then also the fear of having to do it again. Like, it's a weird fear all round. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, some mornings I wake up, and if I don't have anything specifically to do, it does feel really strange. Mm. And I have to suddenly then go and write some emails or speak to someone on the phone or, you know, get something done. But I've had to kind of train myself to have that space and know that I don't need to look at my phone. I don't need to go and read the news. I don't need to, you know, have some kind of productivity. Sometimes productivity is doing bugger all, and I've realised that it's such a crucial thing. To sometimes even just, you know, if I'm with my husband, now husband.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
Does it still feel weird to say, you're like, husband?
Do you know what, I hate to say that it doesn't, and when he says wife, he says it so comfortably, I'm like, you know, have I been your like wife all along in your head? Because literally he says it and it's just like, it just rolls off. And it's
I think there's a period where it sounds weird. You're like, God, I'm saying the word husband. It's a weird moment.
But we were so, I mean, we were just like, you know, from like pretty much the second we met, people were like, oh, they're going to get married. People just knew.
Yeah.
But as I was saying, when I'm with him, I don't take my phone, which has completely changed the game, because if he goes to the toilet or goes off and does something, instead of just sitting there and just instantly going for my phone, I now just
sit,
look around, you know, be with my own thoughts, like watch people, love people watching.
Me too.
So I just be a bit more observant and try and have that kind of calmness. But before I was definitely stuck in a kind of rut of looking at my phone any second that there was silence or no one to talk to. Mm. And I don't, the thing is, like, I'm renowned for like not talking on the phone, and I don't really call anyone, and people call me.
Same. None
I'm
of my friends ever
person.
Call me. They know I won't pick up. They just know. There's like, there's no point calling her. She will not. I hate talking on the phone.
Same.
Even to Jessie, I hate talking. It just feels like a massive waste of time. It's awkward. There might be a pause and I feel worried. Yeah. I hate it.
If Casper calls me, I go, you're right. What are you doing? And they're like, I was just wondering what you're up to. Just wanted to say hello. I'm like,
text me, babes.
Hello. Yeah. Hi. Gotta go. And he's like, no, you don't. Well, you're not busy. I know you're in the car.
Yeah.
I'm like, no. I've got to go. I've really got to send this email. And then that's pretty much
me.
It. I just don't. I don't really like phone calls.
I'm quite
much.
Big on voice notes at the moment because that is almost a conversation, but I'm in control.
Yeah.
This is what I'm going to say succinctly. It will be sent, and then you shall send the same back. Full stop. And then if I want to ditch out of it, I can.
Yeah.
So I just won't look.
Yeah.
I hate it. But it is weird because I feel exactly the same. I find it really hard to just sit and be. And the phone is a part of it, but also, like, say, because I'm so busy with balancing the kids and work, and say, like, on a Monday, both kids are at school all day, and usually I'm working. But if I'm not, I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I've got to be okay
because I feel
with being with me.
Yeah, I feel like specifically you and I, we met when I just started doing music, and it was all mad and it was chaos and it was a different world. There was no Instagram, Twitter was sort of just happening.
Yeah.
Twitter was actually quite big then. It was this new novelty thing. So I feel like you and I were both in that kind of, not peak, but we were both just, you know, and we did so many live lounges and did so many Radio 1 things, and I could sense it, you know, I could sense there was this kind of madness with you. I think maybe you just met Jessie, or maybe you were about to, and there was this kind of excitement, and even though we were both kind of stressed, and I mean, I don't know if you were tired, but I was definitely tired all the time, and that was pre-kids even, maybe.
It was
this kind of thing where I think we both sensed each other's craziness around us, but now it's—I don't know—it feels like maybe we're both at this very different point in our lives, and I can't even relate to having kids yet. So I'm kind of I feel the same as you, except I don't have the kids to contend with.
Yeah, but
with
you
as
don't.
Well.
I think a lot of people have that epiphany without becoming parents. You know, I think mine was a mixture of probably turning 30, some personal shit going on, and having kids maybe stopping my tracks and rethink everything.
Yeah.
And certainly I think you're right, we have been on this sort of bizarre
path where we've both had that just utter craziness. Yeah. And you think you want it, and then actually you crave the simple and
totally
peace and
totally
basic stuff.
And people always say to me, "Oh, when did you want to be famous?" And I'm like, "Well, actually, I don't think I ever wanted to be famous." And that's the kind of wrong way to look at it. I desperately wanted to be a musician. It was kind of sad when I think back to it. I sang so much. I would sing in the pubs, I would sing in the clubs, I would sing in the restaurants, I was singing, you know, I think I went busking at one point. Like I all I wanted to do was sing and play music. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm signed to a record label, I'm signed to a publisher, I've quit university, I've moved to London, and suddenly you're thrust into this world where there's cameras. And you know, I remember rocking up to Jules Holland, the TV show, and thinking, oh yeah, I can do this easily, even though I was just like a kid. And that's one thing that I took for granted, then I was just a kid, and I had to go and sing on live television. And I now have to remember that that wasn't normal, and I think I fucked the performance up. I've never watched it back.
Really? Do you really think you did?
Don't know. I haven't watched it.
Well, you just had a feeling after that wasn't.
No, I just knew, and I was cocky, and you know, these things. None of these things were natural. None of the things I was doing were natural. The people I was meeting, you know, meeting famous people that you've seen from, oh, you know, off of the TV or like on the radio, like as if it's like a normal yeah. thing. Like, oh, that's so and so. And I realised that you suddenly get wrapped up in this world, thinking, oh, I'm supposed to be a part of that world. But actually, you then, from that moment that I started my career with these people and on doing this, doing TV, doing radio, doing the things that normal people just don't do, I realised that was the end of the person that I was.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of this kind of fake person that I had to be in order to deal with the very surreal and strange and definitely not normal situation that I was placed in. And I don't know whether you felt this as well, but you know, you're desperate to just be yourself, but then you realise that for some reason being yourself just didn't really seem to work in so many situations and contexts in the job.
Yeah, I and again, I'm not sure where you're at on this whole sort of very nice trajectory that we seem to be on, because we're going in a good direction. But I started off again quite naively. Like, I mean, I was 15.
You
so
were
I
so young.
Yeah, I
didn't have a
clue what I was doing, but I was just like, oh, this is all very fine, and you normalise it. And then I definitely felt not good enough, didn't fit in. I'm meant to be part of that gang, but I don't really feel like I can be me, so I'll be me with a bit extra or whatever it might have been.
Yeah.
And only in the last 2 to 3 years, I've had a homecoming.
Yeah.
I'm back to just being me again.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit if you don't like me. I don't give a shit if you think my podcast is shit. I don't give a shit if you like my Instagram page. I don't care anymore. I honestly have given up caring, because it's exasperating, and I can't be anything but me.
Yeah.
I don't want to be.
Yeah.
And it's empowering. It's liberating. I speak my mind now. I did not do that before. I would just go, oh, yes, we'll just do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I go, actually, I don't really want to do that. I would rather this. And again, if that upsets you, that is your reaction. I'm not responsible for it. And that has been so nice to get to that point.
Yeah.
So nice.
It is like a revelation, because I did feel... I'm the same. Like, I usually, for me, it involved alcohol. I realised that, well, I thought, I didn't realise, I assumed that I couldn't really be good enough or funny enough or, you know, smart enough or crazy enough to be with certain people. And for some reason, I just found myself surrounded by these people all the time. And they're perfectly nice people. And actually, you know what? Going through probably the same thing and feeling as though they weren't good enough either. And then you've got a room full of people, whether it's a bloody awards thing or a TV show because this is the world I found myself in. That became normal, those situations. Because, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was go to a pub or go somewhere where my friends were at, because I was just recognised all the time. So I ended up having to be around people that also got recognised, because then, you know, they were kind of in the same boat. But then you realise that these people aren't really my friends and they don't really know the real me, that, you know. And so I would drink to make myself what I thought was a more interesting version of myself.
Fun and interesting, Ellie, who's had six margaritas.
But you know what? But even everything I did was nerve-wracking. And people always assume that to do what I do, oh, she must be really confident and just, you know, she can go and do a live lounge, which, by the way, was some of the most nerve-wracking things I've ever done for some reason.
I think everyone says the same thing.
I even drank before those.
Really?
Swear to God. Yeah, and I mean, it sounds, it's, you know, I wasn't an alcoholic because I could not drink. I would say, right, got to drink this morning, so I've got this thing where I'm doing an interview and I don't really know how to answer the questions because I sort of don't really know who I am anymore, therefore I can never really give any real answers because I've sort of forgotten, you know, who's answering.
Yeah.
And so I felt like drinking would at least make me a bit more funny or a bit, you know, or, you know, make it more interesting. But then I could also go easily months without drinking as well. So I knew that I knew from, you know, having I'd had a couple of partners who were addicts and what, you know, and I understood the difference between being able to give up and not.
It just became a comforter for you, like to get through the weirdness of it.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I just had another memory. So I remember the first time you came in for a live lounge, and I thought that was the first time I met you, but it wasn't. So the first time we did a live lounge, I remember we had this awful live lounge at the time in the old studios and these crummy little sofas, and you were sat in the corner with your little bobble hat on.
Yeah.
You did Starry Eyed, and it was just a beautiful, very special moment where I think a lot of people went, holy shit, this is next level, and it was gorgeous. But I remember meeting you actually before that when I was dating somebody else and you were in the same, I think it was somewhere in Shoreditch, and you walked in and they were like, oh, this is Ellie, who's a songwriter friend of mine.
There were lots of people I was put with this one guy who was incredibly drunk and asked me to go and get vodka for him from the local shop, And because I was in that kind of like, yes, yeah, sure. I was just this like naive young singer. And I had quite a few of those situations with I mean, there weren't really any female producers. In fact, there weren't any. So it was all male producers. And, you know, I realized how actually dodgy that was.
Yeah.
This young girl from the age of 18 going into these studios with these blokes. And there generally wasn't anyone else there. And I definitely felt, yeah, that was like a vulnerable time for sure of not really,
because you want to succeed, like your goal is to keep doing what you're doing, so you know you are vulnerable because you want to be polite, and if they're asking you to go and buy them drinks, you'll go and do it. You know it's a terrifying place to be in, and I wish that it wasn't like that, and I think it still is in a lot of ways in many industries that that's the way it goes. And it takes, you know, all of these years to get to where you're at and where I'm at, where you go, I can now say no, thank you very much. Or this is how we're going to do things. And not be scared. And it's sad that we felt scared in the first place, because we should all be able to speak our mind, be who we are, have our opinions. But it takes a while.
I think maybe a couple of times I like voiced my opinion about something, and you get so much shit for it that you kind of like cower away from it and don't, you know, you don't want to continue doing that because it, you know, there was such a random like backlash but people say, no, what do you know, just because you're famous or whatever, and it doesn't mean your opinion like means more than my opinion or whatever, but then it genuinely, I used to say the odd thing on Twitter. I was quite open about political stuff, and I just can't be bothered because you know, people clearly get very upset by it, and I was like, who am I doing this for, like, what is this going to achieve? Like, I want to be honest, and I want to show that, you know, I care about things, but it just, it got to a point where like I was spending too much time worrying about other people's reactions to anything.
Yeah.
That it just was completely, you know, overwhelming, and you stop. I mean, it's just like you said about not giving a fuck and not giving a shit about what people think. And I think at some point you really do have to do that. And
yeah.
I think social media is really to blame for a lot of people suddenly just being conscious of what people think about them and their
opinion. We all are, aren't we? It's terrifying. Because although I don't give a shit, I still do at times worry. Or if someone said something about something I've really passionately poured a lot of love into and they're not seeing that, or they see something else, I find those assumptions really hard to swallow. How have you coped with that over the years? Because you've had assumption on international, like, mass level. How do you, you digest it? Do you park it? You know, what is your strategy?
I've realised that the less controversial I am in giving my opinions and perhaps acting in a provocative way that would welcome that kind of reaction. I know, I think you kind of attract what you put out, and that's what I've noticed, that when I look through comments and things like that, I've noticed that I don't really have a huge amount of negativity. Even when I post, you know, I'll post a picture of something that maybe is focusing more on my body or my face or whatever. I used to be too insecure to do that, and now I just do. And I don't really get, like, a huge amount of negativity, but I really feel like that's because I purposely have kind of kept my opinions to myself while still trying to have that kind of individuality in that voice. I speak about the things that I really genuinely care about, but I don't have any time or energy or actually thought into, for example, if when I see other artists talk about other artists in a kind of derogatory way on Twitter or on Instagram, it gets the most attention. It gets the most interaction from people, which kind of kills me, because I realize that being negative and being not very nice about people kind of gets the most
airtime. It's sad.
Yeah, airtime. And so so then I think some people then think, you know, I have to act a certain way to get this attention, because it seems to be all about gaining friends on the internet. And
yeah.
I know it's very bizarre, but I over the years I have had things, and I've had stories written about me that where I've had to do my best to not respond to them, you know, things that were untrue or things that were perhaps very one-sided, and I like, something told me not to react, and something told me not to immediately respond, because I knew that I would be irrational, I knew that I would say something I regret, and I knew that I wouldn't be doing it for the right reasons, and it's all really to keep people liking you or keep people kind of on your side. And I think it's dangerous to kind of be stuck in that mindset of always wanting to please people.
And how do you then sort of personally find peace with it? Because I try and do this, and this is more in my personal life, but I am very outspoken, and often I will get myself in tricky situations because I feel like I literally can't keep my mouth shut.
What are you outspoken about?
If I see that there's some injustice or someone's treating someone badly, right, within my inner circle,
yeah,
or whatever, I always feel like I've got to stand up and, like, say my bit, because otherwise, this is what I struggle with. If I think, actually, this isn't my business, I've got to just let that play out on its own. There's this, like, thing in my head that can't understand, well, how come they're getting away with it, like, without anyone saying anything? I can't sit peacefully with that. And I know I've got to learn to, but I always think, well, they're getting away with it and no one's saying anything. I'm going to. And I'm not even coming from it, like, in a soapboxy way, or like, I've got moral high ground, blah, 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 because I'm aware of my own, you know, failures and how fallible I am, like anybody else. But I can't sit with it, and I think that takes so much strength to go, I'm letting that play out, their karma will get them at some point or whatever will happen, and I've just got to sit back. I find that excruciating.
Yeah, I think that's my, like, spirit, the spiritual side of me battling with, like, the pragmatic realist side of me, because my spiritual side really wants to say, like, karma, and, you know, you get what you give out.
Because I think I've noticed, you know, over the last couple of years, when I'm much more aware and I'm much more comfortable in my own skin and all of those things we've talked about, that you'll see repeated life lessons, like the same one. We'll all have maybe one or two, and you go, oh, why is this happening again? Like, why am I having to learn this lesson again? And it's the same one. And for me, my other one is boundaries.
Right.
I find I'm just learning to set boundaries now, because before, you know, certainly in my career, but in other parts of my life, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'll do whatever you want, and, you know, we'll make that happen, and absolutely I'll do whatever it takes, or have everything that I've got to make you happy, or whatever it might be. And now I'm getting to a place where I think I believe I deserve, you know, good stuff, whereas I probably didn't before. And I'm happy to go, yes, this is fine, but actually, no, that's not. And I still find it tough, because I want everyone to feel happy and relaxed, the people that I like in my life. But it's so important that we're clear with people. And that one, for me, it just keeps coming back. Like, here's the lesson again. Try again. Try again. Do you have ones that just keep evolving and keep showing up?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I'm sure I do. I think that I used to be much more... I always say irrational, because something that always comes back up, and I've had a lot of therapy, and I've spoken to a lot of people, and I try much more to listen to people rather than talking all the time. I think at one point I probably thought that my opinion and my voice was more important, so I would talk more, and people would talk less. Other people would talk less, and so I think from my childhood and growing up and becoming, you know, who I am now, was that I could be really angry, and I could get really angry, and I think that's definitely affected my relationships. And I think certain things can just stick with you unless you somehow. I mean, therapy for me has helped me literally get rid of things. You can't just take away a trait, a personality trait, but you can work to take it away. I can't think of the right word.
Like exercise something, or channel, like, I think with anger, a lot of time it's channeling that into something else.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for me, I just didn't want to have this anger. And, you know, I've had family stuff, and I've had stuff in my personal life, which is, I think, probably made this anger get worse and worse. But I think also, I guess it's important to be with someone who brings out the best in you. And certainly when I met Casper, this anger thing just kind of went away.
Really?
And
how wonderful.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously at first it didn't. I wanted to be like, I did that thing that we all do when we first meet someone that we really like. And you definitely, and no one can deny it, have like a filtered version of yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Where you, you know, you don't possibly show any of your bad traits. You know, you eat really politely. You know, you sit really politely. Like, I generally, you know, sit kind of like with my legs wide open and just however I want. And I'd sit, you know, with my legs crossed, and I'd like, yeah, do it, and like be really tidy and not swear. And now I do what I want, and it's fine.
I've got a ring on it.
Do whatever the hell I want. But actually, because he's such a calm person, he helped me see things in a different way. And I'm not saying that you have to meet another person to change yourself, because that's absolutely not it. I think you really, if you're not finding the right person for you, and you're like kind of racking your brain thinking, why can I not find someone? It might genuinely be because you're not the best version of yourself in that moment. So you're not going to find someone that's right for you, because you're putting out a different version of yourself. So with Casper, I instantly felt calmer. I think it was a combination of meeting him and a change management. So I kind of had this period of time where, because I literally didn't have anyone to manage me, I just kind of hid away in the studio for a few months, and it was the most amazing, liberating time of not having to do anything. I think it was a combination of those things, but I always have to go back to that
that lesson of trying not to be irrational. I think the reason I say anger a lot is anger was like a emotion, like a feeling that kept coming up in the, you know, however many years I've been doing this, and that's something I have to keep. And I'm not afraid to say it. Like, I keep having to go and talk to people about and trying to, like you said, channel it into something, into my writing, into my singing, or just trying to alleviate it and and not use anger in situations when I could, you know, have something out. I think people might be surprised to hear that, but, you know, I don't think I come across as like an angry person, or like a bitter person about things, but it's definitely something I've had to work on for a long time.
I think anger's a really interesting one because
boxing helps.
Boxing, punching the shit out of something and seeing a face on that punch
it
bag.
It really does. Yeah, it's a few faces.
It's good. Yeah. Because, yeah, a few. A plethora of faces. I think anger's a really important one to talk about because I did a post about this on Instagram the other day. I was having a particularly angry day. Anger's a big one for me. I'm
Why were you having
I can be
day,
a feisty fucker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, again, seeing some injustice that I didn't feel right. was appropriate.
About you or about someone else?
Someone else.
Okay.
And I again probably appear quite calm or at least rational in most situations within my public life. But I can be like a little Jack Russell, like really angry and I can't let things go. And it is a real problem. And when I did this post, I had a lot of people commenting saying, I'm so glad you're talking about anger because especially sort of in the well-being sector, it's almost seen as like you should feel quite ashamed to feel
exactly,
anger.
Exactly, yeah,
like, God,
yeah,
how
yeah.
embarrassing that you haven't sorted that anger thing out. And it's like, wait, this is a human emotion that is, we're all going to feel it on varying levels and it's going to come up. And better to deal with it and acknowledge it rather than suppress it and like let it build quietly down here and then it's going to, you know, erupt like a volcano down the line.
Yeah, suppressing anger definitely.
It's awful.
It definitely doesn't work.
I want to talk about it. I want to talk about all of it. I want to get the nitty gritty out. I want to dissect it, talk to other people. Like you say, I've done tons of therapy about all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, and me too. Yeah.
I want to understand it.
Yeah.
Rather than it just exist. I want to get
and
to
it,
the bones
nothing,
of it.
Like you said, it is definitely nothing to be ashamed of. I think everyone gets angry, but it's how you deal with it. And I know not, I think therapy is also something that I like to speak about because the idea of talking to someone that you don't know, first of all, is very daunting, but actually so beneficial because sometimes friends might be giving you a biased opinion or, you know, something that subconsciously benefits them in some way. So I think it's better to speak to someone who is, you know, completely, I mean, not devil's advocate, but someone who is not part of your friendship circle or part of your world or, you know, who truly gets like an outside perspective and learns everything about you in that moment. And they'll learn so much about you. And I think therapy has been kind of, it has this, I guess, stigma in a way.
It definitely does.
Yeah, especially with men. And I think that kind of needs to go because talking is very important. I mean, I like you, I don't speak to people on the phone. I don't speak to a huge amount of people. And actually, you know, I don't know if you found this as well, but I developed this kind of quite extreme social anxiety. And I think as a symptom of my job of going from this world where I was having to be very sociable and meet lots of people. And people say, oh, you know, you've got to play the game. You've got to meet that person. You've got to do that thing.
Oh, I hate that one.
Right?
Oh, I can't. I can't.
So what I'm talking about is this thing where you are told to meet certain people, to go to certain things, do certain things to benefit your career or, you know, people saying, oh, it's good for business. But actually, desperately, you know, wanting to fight that and being like, but I truly just want to make friends.
Yeah.
I truly just want to
and be good at singing.
Yeah, and just do my job. Yeah. And I think I really, really battled with suddenly having this successful career that I thought, oh my God, cannot lose this. You know, I come from I hate saying poor family, but I came from a family with no money. I came from a situation where everyone around me and my parents and everyone was struggling. And
you know, not even having enough money to like pay, you know, for the electricity or, you know, pay bills or whatever. And so getting this, like, getting this, having this career and realizing that I had this thing that I could have as my job, you know, was the idea of losing it or someone trying to not sabotage it, but, you know, the idea of someone trying to affect your career, the thing that you've built for yourself from nothing, was just so scary. So you know, you're kind of forced into thinking that you have to do these things, but you're battling with it because I know you're like me, that really you just want to meet people, talk to people, have a fun time,
and have a connection, just kind of
have connections and things to be real. But my job was so associated with the opposite that I literally didn't know who I was. Yeah. I was like, who am I? And which is like every day I was thinking, I don't even know what my personality is anymore. I don't know who my friends are. Like, I don't, you know, I wasn't seeing my family. I was in relationships, but I felt like I needed to have someone because I wasn't close to my family at the time. I had this job that was taking me around the world that was forcing me to be in the spotlight every day to be talked about. So I always needed someone, but of course I wasn't really me. So anyone that I was close to, I don't want to go as far as saying it wasn't real, but it wasn't what it should have been, you know, for that kind of closeness and that kind of relationship.
I do regret
that. But it was my survival and it was how I survived. And to survive going from being completely unknown to suddenly everyone knowing who you are, everyone discussing your face, your clothes, your weight, you know, your lyrics, your odd opinion, everything was discussed. It was just like, how do you deal with that?
And so unhealthy.
I feel like I have to think of all the things I did, whether it was I behaved, you know, perhaps badly to someone, or I behaved passively to someone, or I didn't talk to that person at that time, or I didn't do that thing. I have to think about everything I did as survival, because I'm here now, and I'm like, right now, I'm like the closest I've been to who I really am. Mm. And it took all that time, and I have to forgive myself for, you know, for acting certain ways or not doing certain things or treating people the way that I did. I have to forgive myself for that because, I don't think
you were I was coping.
I was like surviving.
I absolutely relate to everything you've just said, like 100%. Probably not to the extreme, because for you it was international and it was, you know, it was all day every day, and I've you know, luckily had these little pockets of time where I, you know, have been on maternity leave or when I've just quit everything and gone, nope, need some time, where I've had a little bit of clarity. But I think, you know, even on the level that I've experienced it, it's insane. And I have the same drive as you. You know, I'm from a working class family. I don't take anything for granted. I'm constantly worried that it's all going to go and that this has just been some weird dream and that it's all going to be snatched away. You know, that drive is part of that tenacity and that little Jack Russell that I've talked of. And again, then you do things to cope and to get through the weirdness and the lack of normalcy and all the strange stuff. And it does worry me, like, you know, we're in this really strange time where I guess it's sort of equal in measure. We've got this brilliant young generation who are all about, you know, environmental issues and activism. Like activism has become this amazing new movement again, which I'm so excited about. But then there's another portion of that generation who, you know, watch a lot of TV shows where they want to be famous, and that's the goal. And it just scares the shit out of me because, you know, you and I are really lucky that we do something we love. And sometimes I do think, you know, we've got a platform because now we're able to do really great work with lots of people listening. Yeah. And I don't think either of us are irresponsible with that. We both want to use that platform and that audience to do good things.
Good,
and that's exciting.
Yeah.
That's, again, really lovely.
Yeah.
But when you just want this fame bit without knowing what it... Well, it's a mythical thing anyway. It doesn't really exist. It's just, you know, people spotting you in the street or, you know, weird opportunities or actually discomfort because lots of people are staring at you or a lot of opinion. And it just scares me that that's the goal for a lot of people without getting... it doesn't bring you anything. The talent or the skill or the hard graft, that, oh my God, that can feel amazing. And that can bring, you know, so many wonderful feelings. But just fame on its own, what is it?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
The second that people, the second that someone says to me, like a young person comes up to me and says, I want to be famous. How do I do it? I I'm like, oh gosh. And then I say it along these lines of, please don't want to be famous. You know, if you have something that you're really genuinely passionate about and it doesn't involve fame, then please do that. Mm. When I was a kid, I just wanted to sing and act, and that's all I wanted to do. And I wanted to play instruments. My dad played guitar, so I was obsessed with guitar. I would play every single night in my room. So it came from a real place. Yeah. It wasn't like I got to a point where I was like, I think I'd like to be famous. You know, it was not that at all. So the fame thing, like you said, is mythical. It's maybe for like a year, it's a bit exciting. Mm. Maybe. And that's just pushing it.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Because,
I had that for sure.
Actually, and I know I've noticed an increase in just people striving for this fame, and it's bloody Instagram that's done it. Mm. It's posting a picture, getting a few likes and thinking, oh my God, that got that many likes. Maybe a next picture and get more likes and so on and so on. And then you're pushing yourself in a way that is not real. It is superficial. And then before long, I think it's another way of forgetting who you really are. Mm. And again, basing yourself on other people's opinions of yourself.
Where your self-worth comes from.
Exactly.
You're placing it in the hands of other people.
And I'm sort of hoping, because I think Instagram is such a, like you said, is a great place for activism. It's a great place for people for young people to come together and really do good. You know, seeing these kids striking all over the world for climate action is absolutely incredible. And I really commend that. And I think it's so admirable and so cool. And so social media can really help with that and get the message across, especially to people who, you have to remember there are generations of people that don't necessarily go on Instagram, and, you know, so they're seeing things on the news and they're seeing these images and captured by people on their phones. Because it's also just people being on their phones all the time, which allows us to always see every single thing in the world that's going on all the time. But at the same time, it is encouraging this generation of people just wanting to be known. And I think that the passion or the want to be famous is the want to be adored and be liked. And I don't know whether it's coming from a place of, you know, not feeling like you're being appreciated in your within your family or your friends or where you live. I think it's just this yearn to be someone and to be something. And it is actually easier these days to become famous.
Yeah.
It's easier because unfortunately it's involved more in superficial things like the way you look and the things you wear, because it's all about pictures and about posting pictures of your how well you can do your makeup and how, you know, pretty you look once you've had this, you know, before and after thing, or, you know, your fashion sense. And that's great if that's your passion, if makeup is, or you're a model and that's your thing. But it's just kind of, I have to admit, I feel like, and I don't, like I said, I get scared of my own opinions on things, but it's kind of out of hand. Mm. I think, and I just hope for some reason in my head that it comes to a head and it just kind of...
It implodes and it all goes back
again. This whole thing of taking away likes, I think it's genius, and I think it needs to happen, because this obsession with likes is just... I mean, I know because I've had it.
Yeah.
Because I've posted pictures and thought, oh, if this doesn't get this many likes, then, you know, I'm doomed. And it's... You know, Casper, my husband's reading this book at the moment called Silence, and it said something in it about, you know, if you switch off your social media and switch off the news for 2 weeks, it's a struggle. But when you eventually go back on it, nothing's changed.
Is that by Erling Kagge, the Norwegian guy?
Yeah.
So I'm so obsessed with him, I've actually befriended him. And we're really? Now email pen pals.
Oh, that's such amazing.
A nerd. He yeah. is incredible. Yeah. Yeah. And I so adhere to like everything he says, and I want to be more like him. Mm. Like, I need to start wearing big woolly jumpers and walking in Norway and, you know, just retreating, because it has gone too far, like you say, and we need to work out ways of blocking out the exterior noise.
But if I've ever switched off, if I've ever, God, sorry, I've got this new brace in and I cannot, it makes me not unable to talk properly. I'm such a dork. I've got that, I don't know if anyone's got Invisalign, but
I've had it.
Yeah,
I've
it's
had
the it. Worst. But it's also great in the end, but during it, it's not annoying. Fun. I've got so much food in my teeth.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing changes. Yeah. You go back on social media after 2 weeks, people are posting the same shit that they were posting two weeks ago. People are doing the same thing. Yeah. They are wanting to give an impression of their life that probably isn't what's really happening in their life.
Mm.
And therefore, you know, people are just expressing this fake world all the time of themselves and other people, and spending more time posting pictures than really being in the experience that they're in. And I know that's been said a lot, but I do feel sorry for people who have got into this vicious circle of only being able to do something if it's worth posting.
Mm.
You know, or going on holiday and being like, oh, let's go there, but you know what, in the back of their mind thinking this is a great thing to Instagram.
Yeah.
Then, like I said, I hope that it implodes at some point, because it's totally out of hand. People aren't really living their lives, and like I said, it's like, what do I know? I don't feel like my voice is any more special than anyone else's, but I also do have a voice, and my opinion is that too many people are not enjoying real things.
Yeah, a lot.
Especially from my perspective as an environmentalist as well, people aren't like experiencing nature anymore. People aren't immersing themselves in the natural world, and just because you're not from the countryside or you didn't grow up in the country and you don't really like the country that much, you know, you're a city person, it's just so good for you and so good to
important.
Be around nature and be around, well, clean-ish air. I think we can argue that not like all air is kind of a bit affected now by pollution, but it, just being in a forest, like being out in the countryside, being out in nature, it really does make a huge difference to your mood. And you know what? You don't need to Instagram it.
Take a picture in your mind.
Take a picture in your mind. And have a moment. Like Casper and I were lucky enough to have a bit of a honeymoon. And we don't really like lying on beaches. We don't like doing the reading book on the beach thing. So we wanted to just hike and bike ride and, you know, do active things and have fun. And I've never had so much fun.
The best.
And you know, it took me a few days to get over the wedding, because it was just so overwhelming having all those people in one place.
Yep.
And, you know, sharing that love and having so much fun. And it truly was the most fun weekend of my life. So it took me a few days to sort of get back to just being me and Casper. But we just had so much fun, and we didn't Instagram any of it. Or, you know, maybe I posted a couple of pictures. But really, you know, when people were saying, how was your honeymoon? What did you do? And I said, oh, it was fun. We did this and we did that. But really, the moment was just for me and him. Mm. And being on those bike rides and going on those walks, it was just so lovely. And I hope that people get more back into the frame of mind of you know what, I'm just going to enjoy this trip somewhere or this whatever with my other half or with my kids, you know, with my family, and just not feel the need to post everything.
Yeah.
I hope.
Or even take a picture at all.
Yeah.
Just don't even take it. I like going walking, and I leave my phone at home, or Jesse will drop me off somewhere and I'll just ramble home without my phone.
Yeah.
Oh, but I am quite mad, so I need it. I have to do it. It's like a discipline.
Yeah.
I have to do it. I have to get out in it.
Yeah,
it's got
yeah,
to
yeah.
happen.
Yeah.
And we'll have a hike. We'll have a walk soon with no phones. I would love that.
Yeah, yeah, let's do it.
Just walk and chat and look at trees. And
yeah, I would love that.
More of that.
Yeah.
Ellie, thank you so much for your time.
It's been
heavenly. I've so wanted to have this chat for a long time, and I'm so glad to see you at a really happy, gorgeous place in your life.
Yeah.
It's a good,
well, you
beautiful
too.
Thing. Yeah.
We've been through a lot.
We have.
And we've seen each other a lot through the years. Not enough, I think, but you know, we've from a work point of view, we've seen each other quite a bit, and you also seem in a really good place. And I think,
you know, there's always things I'm working, and I'm sure there's things you're working on, and I love to speak to people. God, I even had bloody hypnotherapy a few months ago. But I'm always working on things, and yeah, I still get angry and I still get this and that. But I feel right now more human than I ever have. And I think it's going to be a good thing for my album, the next album. I think it's going to be a good thing for when I eventually tour again. So happy I'm married, but my partner is so independent that he just buggers off and does his own thing.
Love that.
So I'll go off on tour. You know, he's in Oxford studying. He's like such a smart, annoyingly smart person. It kills me. So he'll be doing his own thing. And you know what? He's living in Oxford. I'm living in London right now. And it's just so chilled. Yeah. I don't feel any anxiety about it. And, you know, there's always going to be anxiety in my job, in your job. There's always going to be a bit of pressure, and there's always going to be, you know, weird situations. But I think that I'm just better equipped to deal with them now, thank God.
Yeah.
So with all that, yeah, I can feel a little bit more at ease in life, I think.
I'm so, so glad to hear that. It's a wonderful thing to hear, and I've just loved chatting to you. So thank you.
You too. That's great.
You.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, lovely Ellie Goulding. Just such an incredible woman. We recorded this in her studio, so expect a new album soon, I'd say. We've got another singer-songwriter coming up in this series, so do keep your ears peeled for that. Discover it first when you subscribe. And to find out who's on the show next week, find us on Instagram, at Happy Place Official. Thanks again to lovely Ellie, to the producer, Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, and to you brilliant lot for listening. I'll see you next week.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.